You're listening to the postseason of Pod of Wonder. We're taking a break from our usual Wikipedia-based world-building in order to bring you games, world-building experiments, and other stuff. Hello, Wanderers. This week we've got something that's even more different than what we normally do. It's an interview. Interview might actually be a strong word. It's really more of a conversation. But Morgan and I spoke with Jay Dragon of Possum Creek Games. You might know Jay as the designer of Wanderhome, the pastoral fantasy game about animal people traveling through a world recovering from war. We don't really talk about Wanderhome or RPGs in general all that much, so I wanted to take some time to talk about Jay's work at the top of the show. I love Wanderhome. I love Wanderhome for reasons that a lot of people love Wanderhome. The non-violence, the focus on the journey and experiencing the world rather than problem-solving, the way that the text can sneak up on you and give you big feelings that you didn't expect. But I also love Wanderhome for reasons that don't get talked about as much. As a game designer, I can see that Wanderhome knows exactly what it wants to be and delivers on that perfectly. Every list and move and nature is crafted with that goal in mind. As a game player, I love that Wanderhome doesn't exist in one specific form. You're encouraged to change characters in mid-game, to play with or without a game master, or have a game master for just a short amount of time, and to have your story fly in the face of ideas about what a narrative is supposed to be. As someone with a world-building podcast, I love that Wanderhome gives you pieces of the world and lets you decide what they mean. Who's the king of the floating mountains? What's the rebellion? You tell me. Your answer is no more right than anyone else's. If you want to hear Wanderhome in action, the One Shot podcast is currently playing Wanderhome with a great cast, including Brennan Lee Mulligan and Adira Slattery. You can check that out at oneshotpodcast.com. You can buy Wanderhome in physical or PDF form at possumcreekgames.com. And you can find Jay Dragon on Twitter by just searching for Jay Dragon. Oh, I should probably also take the opportunity to say go listen to season 4 of this podcast. We made a travelogue in a world full of animal people and played a beta version of Wanderhome in the season finale. But whatever, that's not really important. On with the show.
Like, don't let that, like, frighten you. You don't need to be on immediately. But.
For sure. No worries. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, hell yeah. So I was rereading my notes on this. I, like, yeah. I keep getting, like, not ambushed is the wrong word, but, like, I get ambushed by my own calendar frequently because I, like, schedule things and then lock it in. And then, like, just zone out. And then, like, suddenly, like, you know, like, in a sci-fi movie when, like, the super soldier emerges from, like, the vat of serum, where it's, like, they're in, like, suspended animation for many centuries.
Yes.
And, like, the tripwire gets set off and, like, their eyes light up and they emerge from the vat. That's what I do for podcasts.
Yeah.
Boom, and here I am.
Yeah, like a flood of information. You're weirdly covered in goo for some reason. And
exactly, yeah. I don't know where the goo came from. Let's not worry about that. And instead of like killing people, I'm just here to like sound smart on podcasts.
No pressure on that front. We don't sound smart on our own podcast.
We do not. We do not sound smart at all.
Yeah. But a couple of like pre-question sort of format things is, I know that you generally say like don't use pronouns. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to confirm like how you wanted us to refer to you, whether
first name is generally good. If it makes the sentence untenable, they them is fine. But in general, like it's like my preferred pronouns are no pronouns, but they is my pronoun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Like, I've just kind of had this thing where I always refer to you as Jay Dragon. Like, yeah. Like, even. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, even with Sidus, who knows you, I'm like, oh, Jay Dragon. You know, your friend Jay Dragon.
Yeah, Jay Dragon. Well, does Sidus still call me Dragon, or does Sidus call me Jay Dragon now?
I think I've always heard them just refer to you as Jay.
Also, I feel so fucking stupid because I literally only just now realized, hi, hello, both of you. I'm sorry, it took me a stupid second. I feel like a fucking idiot. I'm so sorry. I literally was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. I knew it was Danny, I knew it was you. I didn't realize Morgan, I knew you too. I'm sorry. Okay.
I mean, I didn't want to like make a thing
you
of that.
Can't see the face I'm making right now. I have turned a shade of pink.
Oh, I'm like we've definitely hung out in person, but it was like at a convention.
I'm so stupid. Also, we hung out. I know. I'm so stupid. I don't like Danny. I know it's you. What it genuinely is. They cut off your last name in the Zencaster display, and yeah. Okay, let's just move on. Let's not do it.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to call on this. I don't want to justify myself.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's not personal. Is what I will
say. No, I totally understand. I mean, I am sure with everything.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. this is my third podcast in 3 days. I've like ended up doing a podcast a day sort of situation. So. My brain is just so used to coming onto a call and not like just not knowing what's going on. This is my fourth podcast in 4 days. Excuse me.
Oh god!
Wow.
So I've been averaging a podcast or an interview a day.
Damn.
I didn't even count like phone interviews. It's like 5 in 5 days. Anyway, regardless. So I had a moment of like I was in default podcast mode, let's just. Hi, both of you. Let's start from the beginning. Yeah. Hi, how have you both been? How's New Jersey? How's the world? Or not? You live in New Jersey? Well, you live in Philly? I don't really understand beneath New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get a picture of how the world's been. You can probably guess a lot of it.
For sure. So you've both been great? You've both been doing really well? That's the...
Yeah. Across the board. Just A+.
I think it's so funny how Dreamation happened right before the Ronies hit.
I know.
Like,
oh my god.
There's so much that happened at Dreamation where I was like, this is meaningful and worthwhile. And then less than a month later, I was like, eh.
Yeah. Like, as far as last things to do before you go into lockdown, Dreamation's a pretty solid.
Yeah.
But
I'm pretty happy about it.
You just have a lot more concerns suddenly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to Gen Con in a couple weeks, which is... Like, the problem is I'm not going as like, oh, I'm here to have fun. I'm going because it's like, we need to sell enough copies of Wander Home to keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I'm not sure I'm ready to go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's like the biggest one, too, isn't it?
Well, it's very it's comparatively very small this year. It's 11,000 people this year, which is small.
Which is still absurd.
It's small by Gen Con standards. Gen Con normally hits 70,000 to 80,000. So this is an eighth of its normal size.
Wow.
However, an eighth of its normal size is still 11 times larger than Dreamation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, my badge number for Dreamation is in the triple digits. And, like, that's about where it caps.
Sure. Yeah.
God. Yeah, absolutely. Well, hi. Hello.
Hey.
I mean, we can kind of move into the formal...
Yeah.
Air quotes interview portion of this. But so the other question I have is, did you want a standard introduction or like a building up hype introduction? Because I feel like Morgan and I both like legitimately have hype for you.
Yeah.
But we can just say, here's Jay Dragon, or like, here's a list of the things Jay Dragon has done.
Well, like, after I embarrass myself like that, I don't get the hype introduction. But I would if you are generous enough, I'd appreciate the hype introduction, because those are fun in like a wrestling promo kind of way.
Oh yeah. If there's anybody you have a beef with, we can maybe contact them, have them like do some trash talking.
a lot of the beefs I have are very one-sided. I don't know if you've seen my recent escapades with the person who's got a parasocial hatred for me.
But, a parasocial beef. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. An asymmetrical parasocial. The person who like has a Twitter account where they just like shit talk me all the time, and I'm just like, God. This is very one-sided. I don't think about you at all. Like, you've got a lot of posts.
That's wild.
Is that a sign that you've made it, that you're successful, that you have just...
Every like 3,000 Twitter followers you get one anti-follower who seeks to undo you. Like, it's kind of like you make your own Babadooks. Like, getting popular online as a marginalized person means you get to conjure forth your own Babadooks, I think.
That's just a built-in Twitter feature, is they just give you a hater after a certain point.
Yeah.
We added it with the new update. It was part of when they changed the font, they also...
Oh my god!
And Babadooks. You know that one? I don't know. Okay, I don't know if either of you were into Minecraft when you were younger. But I was into Minecraft when I was a teenager, and there was a bit in there where every update, the creator would include in the update that he was removing Herobrine, and Herobrine was this like Slenderman-esque nightmare creature that lived inside Minecraft. And so every update, he would say, he's removed Herobrine. The new update has removed Herobrine. And I think about that a lot as a really kind of like fucked up thing to do to someone. Like, imagine if I announced an update to Wanderhome where I was like, you know, update for Wanderhome, we took out the Lindworm. Like,
like that was there. Did I miss that?
Did I forget about it? Did I lose? There was a monster in the book this whole time.
That's the secret sleepaway crossover. Is the shared universe? Is the Lindworm?
I actually had a very fun conversation with a friend of mine where we kind of mapped out like how all of my games kind of exist in the same geography. Like, even though they're all very like kind of localized barbets, they all kind of have the same like underlying geographical logic of like the city, the outskirts of the city, the valley in between the city and the wilderness, the edge of the world, and like what lies beyond. And like, that's kind of like all of my games kind of are somewhere in there.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Morgan, we'll do formal introduction and then bring in our guest.
Okay.
I don't know how. Like, we normally just start our podcast with us talking.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, it only
vibe. We're just. I feel like honestly, half of what we've said is just good podcast material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It is going in, but like, it just recently occurred to us that maybe we should say our names and our pronouns and stuff at the top of each show.
Oh, like, probably.
Like, we normally just roll into it, and like, suddenly we have a new person. Like, oh wait, we should probably say who we are too.
Especially because like over the course of this podcast, like I think I've changed my pronouns, I've changed my name. Like,
for sure.
Like, there's just like suddenly a Morgan here now. Like, update.
Yeah, like I really miss that person you had for the first two seasons. Where did they go?
My roommate recently changed their name from West to Margot. And I was, you know, I have a therapist who I talk to weekly, and my roommate changed their name in like early June. And in late July, I'm talking to my therapist about something my roommate said. And my therapist is like, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And what does Wes think about that? And I was like, oh, have you been going 2 months thinking that I just swapped best friends when no one was looking? Oh. I just traded them out real quick.
Anyway, I mean, this is all staying in, so welcome to probably like 10 minutes into Pod of Wonder.
I think it's very funny if we keep almost introducing me and then failing to.
Like, we just never get around, like, we're half an hour in, it's time we should start this.
Yeah. Seriously. It's like every time.
You know, I should probably tell them who I am, I guess, but, you know.
We got to build up hype first.
Exactly. Yeah, this is all hype building. That's what
this is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the slow burn friends to podcast guests.
So yes.
The fanfic you've been looking for.
I am still, I don't know if you've seen this, but there is like a sizable amount of Sleepaway fanfiction on AO3.
I have seen that.
And that is genuinely learning that that exists. I didn't read any of it because it felt inappropriate as a creator to read people's fanfic. But knowing that it exists genuinely is like the most I've made it feeling. Like, once you've got AO3 fiction and like a comparable amount of AO3 fiction to like the Avatar movie, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
feel like you're doing all right by yourself.
Yeah,
there are certain things that you judge your level of success by. Kickstarter, guest, whatever, AO3.
Yeah, Kickstarter is like fake money. You know what I mean? Like, it's not real money. Like, people are like, oh wow, you made so much money on Kickstarter, and it's like, you know, right, that the 300K doesn't just like do a little dance into my personal bank account, right? Like, it's not like I took a walk away from it. That's not profits. Mm-hmm. It's gross. We spent $75,000 on printing and another $75,000 on shipping.
Wow.
So that 300K already, like, and that's not including the actual costs of, you know, designing the book. That's just like, pure manufacturing. I'm signing checks for twice or three times my student loan debt, you know?
Yeah, like that has to go towards stuff. Like, it doesn't just materialize a product.
Exactly. And like, I have an accountant now. I pay money to an accountant to help me navigate taxes because taxes are so scary.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah.
Taxes are scary just like as a person. Personal taxes, I can't imagine with like business taxes.
The thing about Kickstarter is basically like the short end of why they're so scary from an accounting level is that if you don't earmark things correctly, the government gets really confused because they see, like, let's say in 2016, you made $200,000. And then, and so they tax you on your income of $200,000. And then the next year, you've lost $200,000. And so the government's like, how are you suddenly crazy in debt after you made so much money last year that we taxed you on? And so it's like, no, you have to earmark all of that money. You have to be able, you have to be ready to explain to some random IRS person what all those dollars are going towards, or else they'll tax you on it, and they'll tax you at a very high rate because it's freelancer income, and freelancers get taxed really bad. So that's kind of always been the scary thing for Kickstarters with me, and why I know people who only launch Kickstarters at the start of the year, because by then they'll have spent most of that money and it's business expenses, and they don't have to worry about it the same way. Mm. Start a Kickstarter in November. It's very, it can feel very scary. Anyway, we should probably do the pun.
I think it's your turn to derail this one.
Okay, cool. I'll just talk about my cat the whole time.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
Morpheus did try to, like, when I was reading my hardcover copy of Wonder Home, Morpheus decided he wanted to sit on it. He was interested.
That picture you posted of Morpheus sitting on Wonder Home is one of the cutest goddamn things. I really
love. Yeah. Yeah, just like you chilling with the book and then just like mid, like gaping maw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like very like he scream at own ass kind of energy. scream at hard book. The Wander Home books are so much chunkier than I thought they would be. They're like I keep telling people they're bigger than what you expect, and everyone's like, yeah. And I'm like, you wait. Like, you hold it in your hands, and you're like, you could hurt someone with this. Like,
yeah.
You
could fight. I got it. I'm like, this is a book. Woo.
Yeah.
Actual real book. Yeah, it's like, it's not like, like, Sleepaway is lovely, but, like, it's kind of an overgrown periodical in terms of, like, heft. Mm. But Wander Home is, like, even the soft, like, the hardcover especially, the hardcover is a brick. Even the soft cover, though, the soft cover is, like, it really wallops you. Like, if you need to fight someone, you could really fucking wreck them. my new goal as Possum Creek is to make books that double as defensive weapons.
Nice, yes.
We have Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, the Kickstarter, coming up in March, and I'm genuinely worried about what the size of that book is going to be. Because the text is done. And that gives you, like, an idea of the size of the book, right? And the text, there's a lot of words that we have written for it. And I'm not sure, like, whether or not it's going to be, like, Have you ever seen, do you know how big Chubo's Marvelous Wish Granting Engine is?
I've seen the physical book, like pictures of it. And yeah. Much denser than I was expecting.
Yeah, the spine having room for the author and the title of the book next to each other, like kind of like one after the other, like on a, most books, instead having the spine alone is wide enough to like contain lots of information. Like you can put information on that spine. That's the kind of books that I want to release.
Yeah, yeah. The goal for Yazuba is just like stack each word in the title like horizontally on the spine. The word gets its own line of text, and you will have just a doorstop of a book.
Exactly.
Yes.
That you occasionally move to play games with.
That's the goal. That's the goal. You look. Look. The whole thing, right? Is playing games is so blasé these days. You want to hit people with games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Use games as like we are entering a utilitarian age of game design, but books need to double as something else. And doorstops, blunt weaponry, bricks for building, all good and great. Wander Home, however, is very bad kindling, and I do not recommend it. That is my thing. That is something someone warned me. I was joking about burning a copy of Wander Home, like symbolically feel free, and they were like, don't do it. The paper will like be very toxic.
Oh, yeah, it's very glossy. The smoke will not be.
Yeah, the book is basically a pile of chemicals. Like I don't know if I don't know if you smelled your copy of Wander Home when you got it.
I have not.
The new book, the new Wander Home smell is something else. It's like, it smells like acrylic paint, like an artist's studio. It smells like just a lot of paint, which I think is just the chemicals and the oil and the, like the inks and all of that kind of coming together. But it feels like, it smells like an artist's studio. And it's very nostalgic for me. But also I've had a couple people be like, they had to let their Wander Homes air out.
Oh, God.
Okay.
We should probably start
this podcast, right?
Yeah, we should it's a world building podcast, right? That's the whole vibe of this place.
Yeah.
Kinda, yeah. It's very driven by randomness, though. Like,
yeah.
It's a zero planning world building podcast.
Yeah,
for sure.
Very chaotic.
Yeah, plans are for chumps.
Like, it's very driven by like our curiosity and like what do we think we should explore next. And also, like each episode is based on a random Wikipedia article, which sends things into directions that like you cannot plan for.
Well, what's the random Wikipedia article this time?
I didn't think to pull one up. Let's
give me
one. Let's see if there's
we can't do this without. I knew we were forgetting about something, you know, forget intros. We need Wikipedia articles.
Ooh, gonna probably butcher this pronunciation, but Franzbrötchen. It is a small sweet pastry baked with butter and cinnamon. It's typically found in northern Germany, often served with breakfast, but enjoyed alongside coffee and cake.
That sounds really lovely. I really love a German pastry. I've fallen into like a rabbit hole of YouTube videos about European history. And it's always very scary because the problem with watching anything on YouTube, right, is that there's the spiral into the alt-right, right?
Like
anything you watch on YouTube, it tries to pull you towards the alt-right. Mm-hmm. So watching European history videos on YouTube scary.
Because like that would be like, particularly prone to that.
Yeah, it's like you click on the wrong link and suddenly it's like, you know, this is why the Third Reich was good, actually. And it's like,
oh, God.
I don't want this. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. And I haven't hit that, but I was really into Among Us, a quarantine ago. I would watch Among Us YouTube videos, and then it would recommend me like gaming YouTube videos, and then I'd like kind of watch a couple of those. Then it'd be like, "Hey, do you want to know why it's okay for gamers to say slurs?" And I was like, "I really don't." So I've been trying to watch European history and stick to things that aren't awful. But in that, I've learned a lot about pre-19th century Germany, and I'm just like, "This is so like." We really, in the modern day, act like the nation state is such like a universal thing. Like, even when people talk about like history, they come up with like places. They're like, oh, the nation state, that's crucial. And it's like, hello, like not 200 years ago was like the German nation state actively getting built. Like, you know,
yeah.
Italian, mm-hmm. Italy didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Well, because, like, what's so interesting, right, is like, I'm kind of so fascinated by the Holy Roman Emperor and the Holy Roman Empire and its kind of later form, like before Napoleon kind of blew it up,
mm-hmm.
where it's like you've got a bunch of little German fiefdoms, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've also got a bunch of nobles in various parts of the world. So like you've got like the king of Britain was on the advisory panel that elected the next Holy Roman Emperor. And like that's part of why the monarch of Britain has never been referred to as an emperor, is because they were technically subservient to the Holy Roman Emperor, even though they weren't part of the domain and they had way more power than him.
Oh wow.
And so it's like this Holy Roman Emperor who is this like elected noble, elected by like a team of other nobles, who was effectively like the UN of German fiefdoms. It's just such a weird thing to have in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
what a bizarre event to have occur, and for everyone to be like, oh. And the nation state is this enduring thing. And it's like you go back 200 years and you've got the most odd way of structuring a government in the middle of Europe that you could possibly have. That's I kind of adore because it's so odd.
The Wikipedia article for Holy Roman Empire just has this little animation of the changing borders of the Holy Roman Empire like over the years. And it's just like a frequently shifting blob over like literally a millennia, and like 200 years ago, like this was normal, like stable countries, like set borders, and like that is unusual in the span of human creation.
You know, like when people make their fantasy maps or whatever, they put the nation states, like they have nation states, you know, and it's like absolutely not. People would not know the borders of their own country. That's a ridiculous concept. Like you know, like most borders are just like, oh, well, you know, we rule all the way up into the mountains, right? Or we rule to this river and then we stop the river.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, and there are like very few man-made delineated borders, one of them being the one between England and Scotland, which was Hadrian's Wall, that then kind of became a thing they used. You know, it wasn't really the wall, it was just kind of a vibe. But like, it was just kind of a vibe, right? Because like...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you've got shepherds, everywhere you've got, you know, bandits, and you've got a lot of people who have a lot of reasons to just not care about borders. And
people, you know, are going to move.
Yeah, exactly. People have many reasons to move. And the entire development of the passport, like the modern day passport, was developed out of the justification of keeping out refugees.
Oh.
The modern day passport came out after World War I, when all of Central Europe collapsed, right? Like, you know, Germany collapsed, Austro-Hungarian Empire split up, the Ottomans split up, you know, Italy was a mess. Like, everything was a mess in that whole area. You know, the Russians had their Soviet moment. And so it was like, all of a sudden, we all need passports. Like, it was like, we need passports in order to keep people out, because they need to be able to justify. Like, passports have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. But originally, it was like, oh, this is a nobility-only thing, right? Like, it was like, you know, hey, I'm in this country, but I'm not a citizen of this country. I'm from this other country. Like, that's a thing you only need if you're a noble. But over time... like it was like with World War One, where they're like, we need to give this to everyone. We need to use this as identification and like, you know, kind of a way to monitor people to justify keeping them out of our country.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, like our whole idea of like immigration and movement from one place to another is so modern. It's like modern even by the standards of other things that are modern. So we should probably start the podcast.
Pot of Wonder.
Pot of Wonder.
Yeah.
I'm always so bad at introductions.
Yeah,
same.
I'm like I always like I remember one time I was what is it called?
Cult?
Panel. I was on a panel with some really impressive people. Mm-hmm. And it was the Strix. And they were introducing themselves, and they spent about a minute talking about all of their incredible qualifications, because they are a very talented individual. You can talk about how they were involved in Bluebeard's Bride and all these other kind of famous RPGs. They're talking about how they have a master's in game design. They're talking about how, you know, they're working for like this AAA company making the Dungeons and Dragons video game, and they kind of did all that. And then immediately after them, I had to introduce myself, and I was just like, "Hi, I'm Jay. Oh God, I make things people like." And the panel host had to like prod me to say more, like be like, "What kind of things?" I felt like a kid, you know. I felt like a kid who hadn't like rehearsed, you know. And I was like, you know, like when you're a child and the school teacher is like, "Well, what else is there?" You know, like, yeah, I'm say a little more, you know, like keep going.
Oh, God.
Like,
that does sound awful.
The panelist was right. I said some more stuff. I was just so flustered because it was like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, I'm generally bad about talking about myself. Mm-hmm. Like, give me a topic I can like contribute or at least listen, but when it comes to like, "So who are you?"
Absolutely.
I can give you name.
I've had to get good at introducing myself simply because it comes up a lot, and it does mean I've kind of boiled it down into like a little pitch, but I don't know, it always feels so weird. Because it's like, you know, it's like, "Hi, my name is Jay Dragon. I don't use pronouns, but if you must, I'll go with they, them. I write games about community, liminality, and the magic of the mundane. I'm known for writing Wanderhome." Right? Like, that's my little pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it holds up. It holds up. But I always feel very, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't want to have to introduce myself. I want that wrestling intro. I want someone who can come with me everywhere I go.
And yes.
Be like,
okay,
know,
"The one, the only
and then like,
oh, okay, now you're reading into the introduction I had planned. So walk that back.
Well, too bad you had to make that introduction if you want me to eat it.
Yeah, that is fair. It has taken me half an hour to get there.
Yes.
I've forfeited rights to it.
Your introduction is now the intellectual property of Possible Games Inc. That is a joke. Please do not come for me, Twitter. I'm joking.
Because I mean, I can clip the audio of the introduction, and you can just kind of loop that as you walk around places.
I think it's much funnier to have the audience build towards it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine they're just waiting on tenterhooks. Like, who are these people? I'm pretty sure I know one of them.
What am I listening to? Yeah, when I encounter audio of a bunch of people I don't know talking for a half hour, I eagerly wait to find out who they are.
Yeah,
it's like Pavlovian.
Uh huh. What about we flip this? Ooh. Morgan, you introduce me. I'll introduce you. And collectively, we will introduce Jay.
There we go.
Cool. So, what should I say about you, Danny? Just
I guess name. Any pronouns are fine. I host the podcast you're currently listening to. And anything else you feel like adding?
Okay. Cool. So that's Danny.
Hello.
And any pronouns are fine. He hosts this podcast with me and others that you're listening to now.
Crushed it. Good job.
Woo!
Great work. That one's really good.
Yeah.
Whee! Okay.
And that was Morgan. Oh, yeah. What do you want me to say for you, Morgan?
before I
just roll into it.
You know, Morgan, they, he pronouns... And I co-host this podcast.
And that other voice you just heard was Morgan. They, he pronouns. They host this podcast that you're currently listening to. It's Morgan.
Woo! Clack, clack, clack,
clack. Woo! Woo!
And that third voice you've been hearing for over half an hour now.
Yeah.
You may know this person from the games Sleepaway, Esoteric, Flower Court,
Sorry, I had
a whole list just mentally spooled up.
Okay.
You can, yeah, feel, no. Yeah, jump in. No,
you can go. You can go. You were doing it.
Okay.
You got them.
Like games for the
missing and the
fam. Something and something.
Games for the missing and the fam. My darlings.
Try not to navigate to the itch page. Deep untitled one. Untitled one. You may also yeah.
Mm-hmm. Monsty time. Don't forget about Monsty time.
Oh, how could I forget about Monsty time?
Yep. My mm-hmm. I found an article recently where someone was it was a Medium article about someone talking about how tactical RPGs are bad, and they were like, this mm-hmm. is a scourge that is infecting RPGs. Even the creator of Wanderhome wrote one. Like
ooh. Oh my god.
It was very like, you know, like, oh, this is a new fad and J Dragon. Co-opting it, and I was like, I am.
So weird.
I just wanted to write it. I never thought about fads in my life.
Yeah,
nothing I do is for fads.
And at the same time, I feel like most people aren't writing like 10 million HP trolls and like
yeah,
like factorial mm-hmm. types of damage.
Yeah, yeah. Like yeah. A game where I was worried about the 10 million HP troll, because I think that might actually be a little flimsy. there are attacks in the game that can do enough damage to one shot that 10 million HP pretty effectively.
Nice.
Anyway, it's J Dragon.
It's me.
Yeah.
Simon.
Clap, 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 clap.
Yay!
Was it worth it, listeners?
I like
how we got in the middle of the introduction.
Yeah.
I like the of a podcast that fucking hates its listeners. It's just like, I'm going to torment you for 40 minutes in order to get
to
know this person.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of our
theoretically,
vibe.
Theoretically, they could just read the title of this episode, yeah. But now I'm tempted to just put mystery guest now.
They listen to podcasts. Why would they know how to read?
Right.
I thought that was the whole point of podcasts, is that you can't read.
Mm. Yes.
I can't read. That's why I listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Yay,
I learned, by the way, speaking of the collapse of the Holy Roman Emperor, that the pastry that we mentioned earlier, the one that none of us can pronounce, it comes from, what do you call it? It came from when Napoleon invaded Germany and brought with, it's named after a kind of an alternative word for, it's in the French model. The name means like the French pastry, and it's a croissant that got deep fried on accident, and then people really liked it, and reasonably nice. So. I would also really enjoy a deep fried croissant. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where the Franz Brötchen came from.
Yeah. We brought it back to the article. Good job, everyone. Woo-hoo!
Thank you. Well, then Franz Brötchen. That's really hard. I can't do the German R at all. Like I keep translate like Spanish, like bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So since we've officially started the podcast, Zencaster is kind of finicky, so I'm gonna stop this file and start up a new one.
Sounds good.
Wander home.
Yeah, there's a certain flow to that that I think is coherent, question mark.
Yeah, and people listen to podcasts for the jokes. They're not here for
any of them. They're here for the fun times.
Yeah, exactly. The parasocial desire of hanging out with people. And you, podcast listener, you're hanging out with us too. There's four people in the call right now, and you're here too. You've just left your mic muted. So when you mute your mic, we can hear you.
We are your friends, and you are here with us.
Yeah, exactly.
Podcast listener, you need to shut up. I didn't like what you said at all. Go back to being
Yeah. And every time there was like a pause for a few seconds, that was when you were talking. That was your point to interject.
We promptly ignored you. We heard what you had to say and then decided that it was dog shit. So we
stopped listening.
Yeah.
And what about when there was only one set of footprints in the sand?
That's when we all carried you, listener, and complained about it.
Yeah. We said, this is heavy and dumb. You can start walking again.
Hurry up. I once saw one post that was like, and what about when there's only one set of footprints in the sand? Oh, that's when Jesus got on your shoulders and rode around like a little monkey.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, we've started the podcast. We've done it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We made it all the way. Yeah. We made it all the way to the start of the podcast.
We did.
It's been a journey.
It has.
So thanks for coming on, Jay. If you have anything you'd like to plug or some, tell us where to follow you.
Oh God! I can't breathe. miserable. Better support the Patreon. I always forget to tweet about Patreon because Twitter Twitter does not like it when you tweet about Patreon. Twitter gets mad at you when you tweet about Patreon. And so I have to come up with really inventive ways to tweet about it. And I think my favorite is just being like an old shopkeep and being like, "Have you examined my wares?" I'll post a picture that's like,
Have you examined this Patreon? It came from the mysterious depths. Its origins unknown.
You can't say Patreon. You got to refer to it. I always call it. So I would say, like, have you considered supporting us? Or like, there's other ways to support us. And then I've got a picture of a Patreon. And then all text. I don't use the word Patreon either because, like, I don't really understand how the Twitter algorithm relates to alt text, and I don't want to get yelled at. You know?
Yeah.
Not yelled at. Yeah. I just want people to see my tweets.
Yeah, the algorithm tries to tamp you down if somebody other than Twitter wants to make money.
Exactly.
Okay. Anyway.
that silence gets cut in post.
I'm sorry, listener. That was okay. Salient point. We're not going to address it moving forward, but we did hear you say that, listener. Thank you.
Good job, listener.
Good job, listener. Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll remember that one next time. Oh. Yeah, I'll watch out for that. You're right. Yeah.
Next time.
Are you gonna keep that silence in? Are you going to keep that wonderful, like, 20-second moment where you're all just vibing in?
I mean, now that we've commented on it, I think I have to.
Oh, you have to. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It was such a... What's so funny about it, right, is it's not like an awkward sound. I feel like we were all just like chilling.
Exactly.
Like a group
exhale. It feels
exhale.
Like, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, like a hanging out like moment where it's just like, okay, that's just like a bit of the conversation dwindled down and then... It's just a nice little break.
As before the next bit. Like I've gotten so in quarantine, I've gotten so bad at socializing.
Yeah,
where it's like I'm going to see a friend soon. We're both fully vaccinated. It's all fine, but we were literally like, "So, what are the plans for hanging out?" And it was like, "We are going to sit in the same room and be on separate computers the whole time." And I was like,
"Yeah,
great. That's what I'm here for. That's all I want right now. For the love of God, don't make me be social."
Yeah, but we were at Morgan's partner Russell's birthday party like last weekend, and with what, like
everyone
six
vaccinated? Of
yeah,
course.
Everyone.
Of
yes,
course.
we are safe
well,
and
I'm
sane
sorry,
people.
This is a very stupid question, Morgan. Is your partner's name Russell?
Yes.
Okay, I heard Brussels, and I was really excited about that new trans name unlocked. But please,
yeah.
Like, no.
I've got Germany on my mind. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it was an attempt to tie it into the German pastry. I didn't quite make it there.
Forcibly renamed Morgan's partner in order to fit thematically with what we're doing.
Yes.
The German pastry sub-theme of this episode.
Yeah, but we were there with like six people, which is, you know, the most people I had been with in over a year and a half. And it was just like, you know, we had some snacks, we opened like a bunch of magic cards and
yeah,
like then just kind of left, like, mm-hmm. like that. And that was a great time for me. Like,
yeah,
that is what my socialization level could handle. And it's what I got.
Grubby threw a party in that kind of gap period where it's like everyone was vaccinated, but before the Delta variant, you know, that mm-hmm. little, that month we all had. It felt okay to throw a party where everyone's vaccinated. You know, I'm queer, and queer parties are very much as you just described. They're very subdued. They're like, you know, like it's like, you know, six people in a room. The mountain goats are all in the background. Uh-huh. Someone's crying. Maybe you know, like that's a queer party. That's good enough for us.
Yeah.
But everyone talks about trauma at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a sharing circle. You know, mm-hmm. we try and play Jackbox. So maybe we're like, oh yeah, let's play a board game, and then we all kind of like have ADHD about it. I'm really used to that as being like what I mean when I say party. But Grubby decided to throw kind of a proper party, like an actual party. And it was like there was a house band playing, you know, heavy metal. There was a lot of substances of a lot of different varieties. And there's this moment I had where I didn't go to the party itself because it was very overwhelming. But I went to the after party. I came by the next morning for brunch. And
see, that sounds nice.
There was a lot of people, and they were all very hungover. But the moment that I distinctly remember was walking into the front door of the house, and it, you know, it's a total wreck from the party. You know, there's you know, pancakes getting made. There's, you know, and then in the corner of the room, there's about six people playing Dixit while Matrix 2 plays on a flat screen behind them. It's like, yeah, that's what it's like these days. That's peak party experience.
Yeah.
Is coming down from a illicit substance high, playing Dixit while a Matrix sequel plays behind you.
Yes.
Honestly, a Matrix sequels at parties kind of raise questions for me, because it's like, was there a first Matrix? Like, did you?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of my big question. Is like, did you watch the first Matrix and then play Dixit during the second Matrix, or was it like you jumped straight to number two?
Yeah.
Like, what's the trajectory of the screen going on behind you?
Like, either way, there are questions.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you're jumping straight to the second, then. I mean, that's the question right there.
Yeah, that's but, like,
just like, why? Yeah.
I will defend the Matrix sequels more than most people will, but I still don't support jumping to number two.
Yeah.
Like, even my most passionate defense of the Matrix sequels still thinks the first one's the best.
Yeah.
Unless like you were intentionally, I want a movie playing in the background that will bump over at and
watch.
And the Matrix sequels are very good at that.
That's true.
But I do know that household. There was a period in quarantine where Grubby's hobby was watching all of a series of movies. So it was like the house would watch like all the Harry Potters, all the Pirates of the Caribbean, all the Matrixes. Apparently, like just watch the whole trajectory of it. And there was a very brief in our quarantine pod rejuvenation, or what's it called? Resurrection of Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3. You know, there was a lot of discourse about whether or not those were good movies. Did you know? Hold on, I'm sorry, not to talk about Pirates of the Caribbean 2, but really interesting thing from a game design perspective. I learned recently in Pirates of the Caribbean 2, you might not remember this because you probably haven't seen the movie in a while, I assume.
Yeah,
there's a game they play where Moby Dick is trying to win Will Turner's life, his soul, and they play and Will Turner and his dad and Moby Dick play a dice game. They play this like gambling betting game. And in the movie, in the cut version of the movie, in the theatrical release, the dice game is a very small part of the movie, right? Like it's kind of like swept over. In the extended release, they spend a lot of time explaining the rules and talking through it. It is actually a game. It's a playable game.
Oh, wow.
Play this dice game.
Like, original to the movie?
It is not quite original to the movie, but it was a popular pirates betting game. And they kind of adapted a few different sets of rules to make this coherent set of rules. Because, you know, the pirates have different rules for the dice game. They set it all up. They play it out in the movie, and it is a coherent game that follows all the rules. And the actions the characters make are not only, like, reflective of the character's personality and, like, relevant to the plot. They are, like, they're, like, deeply – they tell you a lot about each character. They are, like, powerfully thematic tools. And so this – but, like, no one knows how to play the dice games. It's a really principle way of characterizing these characters. But, like, if you do actually pause the movie, learn how to play this dice game, and then watch the scene where they play the dice game, it is coherent. And it says a lot about the characters.
Wow.
Where, like, the father does a play that on the surface seems illogical, but actually helps out his son. It's like, there's things he does where it's like the only way that he could, like, help his son is by doing this. Moby Dick is, like, arrogant and, like, confident and, like, plays like that. Like, you know, like, everyone kind of is playing the game according to their personality. Like, it's one thing, right? I always think it's cool, right, when a game does have, like, a coherent, like, chess, for example. Like, you know, when it's like, oh, they're playing chess, and they're playing chess correctly, and the chess moves they're making are meaningful. I think that's neat. I think it's a lot neater when it's a game no one's ever heard of before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're not, really cool. Like, it's like, it's not like it's a shared cultural understanding. It's like, this new thing.
I mean, first of all, you're right. I don't remember that at all.
Yes.
But second is like, yeah, like that kind of speaks to my enthusiasm for like fictionalized sports stories, but like utter disdain for actual sports.
Yeah.
Cause like sports stories are like, you know, it's about the characters, like how they play the game or whatever is like, it says something about them or like their personalities.
Yeah.
And like particularly sports anime and and even more particularly things that aren't technically sports, like board games and like card game animes. Like the further you get from like a recognizable like American televised sport, like the more I'm get interested for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hong Kong anime is very good. That's why I loved The Queen's Gambit. That's why I really fell into The Queen's Gambit, is that it's a sports anime.
Yeah,
with it's Beth Harmon in a sports anime, and I also got back into chess, and I got specifically into I'm not good at chess. Okay, so like I've played a lot of chess in the past 6 months. I'm not good at chess. I'm like okay at chess. I have started watching a lot of competitive tournaments and like learning about the history of competitive chess, and it rules because it's like WWE for accountants. Like it is the most high stakes, emotional, dramatic, explosive stories, but all of the actors of these stories are the most boring people you can imagine. And that's really fun, right? Where it's like about these like people where it's like their version of trash talking is that they don't shake hands before they play, they'll play disrespectful openings.
Yeah.
You know, sort of stuff. Or like they'll like make, you know, they'll subtweet each other on Twitter, but like in really boring ways. They're all, and I think part of that, right, is that many of them are like Russian or like Norwegian or like, you know, like, or like, they, you know, they're from, their English is not their first language. And so they don't, there are very few people in chess for whom English is their first language. And so you get, when they do press interviews in English, you lose, I think, a lot of their, like, their humor becomes very dry. That also kind of rules. It's kind of really fun. I remember there's this one moment when Magnus Carlsen, who's the best player in the world and has been for, like, you know, eight, nine years, he's in an interview and he's joking with someone. And they ask him, you know, what is your favorite gambit? And a gambit is where you sacrifice a pawn in order to, like, get a better position. And Magnus was like, oh, I don't play gambits. I prefer to win without losing pawns. Like, I just get a better position. And it was so dry and technical, but it was so, like, there was this, like, edge to it where it was like, oh, I'm in deep enough to think that this is actually very funny. That's why I've gotten into chess. Also, you get moments where it's like Daniel Dubov live streaming playing chess from a strip club, or like other grandmasters are like having fun in the background, or like, you know, or like, you know, like you'll have a moment like Hikaru Nakamura got into a fist fight with another grandmaster, and that amazing. But you have this video of like Fabiano Caruana, the number two player in the world, watching as like the number four player in the world punches this like other guy, and it's just like, woof, you know, bad plays. And the chess, and they're chess grandmasters, so they're all dweeby intellectuals. Like, that's basically it, right? Like the over the top emotional storylines the WWE don't appeal to me, because they feel, you know, they feel very manufactured. Chess is not manufactured. These dudes are just like that with each other. Okay, not to derail about chess for a full 10 minutes, but I do need one last thing to say. Chess is one of the few sports where everyone's ranked, like everyone has an ELO, right? Which is just your objective chess number. You just get a number that just that's just objectively how good you are at chess. It's like a power ranking in a shonen anime, you know? Like you are this good at chess. And everyone gets it. And so the number one in the world is like a meaningful thing to quantify. Magnus Carlsen is the best in the world. Like, he's got the world champ title. He wears a big wreath. He's like, he's the number one. And, you know, if you want to become the number one, you must defeat him. There's no other sport like that. There's no other sport where it's like there's one guy. Wild. And if you want to, you have to fight your way up the ranks to get him. And then it's so perfectly structured.
Like, I don't know if professional chess players have public personas or like even need to worry about that. But I feel like being able to boil it down to a number, it's just like you can trash talk all you want. I'm just going to point to my number, which is higher than your number.
Yeah. Well, because literally what an ELO is it is a mathematical representation of how likely you are to beat someone else based on their ELO. Right. The idea is that you can compare ELOs and determine quantitatively how likely you are to beat this person. Mm. And ELO is logarithmic. So someone with a 1800 ELO is, I have an ELO of 1200. So someone, and that's like, that's considered like 800 is considered like, you know, an okay beginner. I'm like, you know, an okay intermediate. I have like, I'm 10 times as likely to beat an 800. A 1600 is 10 times as likely to beat me. And it's like 100 times more likely to beat an 800. I'm 1200, right? Magnus Carlsen is 2850. And that's exponential, right? Every single step of the way, it's exponentially more likely to beat someone. So Magnus Carlsen could play 100 people of my ELO while blindfolded and beat every single one, right? That's Magnus Carlsen.
Oh my God.
And like Magnus Carlsen can do that to grandmasters. There's videos of Magnus Carlsen up against three grandmasters while blindfolded and beating every single one.
Oh my God. Like,
and grandmasters do that to international masters, and international masters do that to, you know, regular chess players, and regular chess players do that to beginners. Like the it's like the scale, and then like computers can do that to Magnus Carlsen. There are robots that can whip Magnus Carlsen, you know, like just in chess. Like it's incredible. It's bonkers. It's like the skill ceiling. That's why I'm into chess. Also, partially is because I'll never be good at it. I don't have to worry about ever monetizing my hobby. But chess is such a high ceiling that it's like, cool, I don't have to worry about getting there. I'm not trying to be the best at chess, because if I wanted to be the best at chess, I should have started when I was four. I'm too old now.
That's so cool. I did not actually know all of that about chess. So I am just like, vibing and learning. This is very exciting.
Actually, I'm actually a huge nerd. Okay. Not dominate the conversation for chess for a full 15 minutes.
Continue.
Can I tell you one more chess thing that I really
love? Yes, please.
Okay. So for a long time, you know, the best computer in chess was Stockfish. And Stockfish is an analytical computer. Not to get bogged down in details, but it's it computes, right, the best. It like looks down a branching decision tree of like hundreds of options, and what's the best move for its opponent in each of those options, and then, you know, going, you know, spiraling out, and then it picks the best decision tree and makes the move based on that. So that's Stockfish. And Stockfish was thought to be the best at chess. There was nothing better than it. And that was the end of chess, effectively, is that Stockfish had solved chess. Until in 2017, Google designed AlphaZero, and they built a neural network, and it played 100 million games of chess against itself. And then they set it against Stockfish. And the thing is that Stockfish, the whole time, thought it was winning. It was making the best move every single time. But AlphaZero did not lose a single game against Stockfish. It beat it every single – it beat or drew it every single time. And the reason for that is because AlphaZero plays like a monster. Like, Stockfish is this, like, analytical slow roll. AlphaZero is this belligerent attacker that will gladly sacrifice its own pieces if it can trap your pieces. And so it picks you apart. It takes your little castle. It picks it apart. It isolates your king from all of its allies. And then it crushes it. Like, it plays so alien to how Stockfish plays. People were emulating Stockfish, right? Where it's like, okay, this slow analytical approach where you don't take risk, you don't set yourself up for failure, you play very methodically, and like you follow this decision tree process. Whereas AlphaZero is a philosophy. AlphaZero is not a decision tree. AlphaZero is a mindset. And so it destroys you with its mindset. It's like philosophy of chess is different. And I've talked to people about like the concept of chess being solved and how for a lot of people, they assume that a solved chess is like tic-tac-toe, where you know kind of the correct moves. And if you make those moves every single time, you draw. But I think that chess is going to, if it ever gets solved, which I can't, but like if it did, it would be rock, paper, scissors, where there are three philosophies of how to play chess and they undo each other. And that's my theory on chess, or even just like two philosophies that like can, you know, kind of go. I think it would be three, but like three philosophies that can like undo each other, and that would be how chess would get solved. Is that it would end up still being dynamic?
Cool.
That's my chess aside. That's my 15-minute long chess aside.
That was delightful.
Yeah.
I also just think the fact that like it's a game dominated by robots, right? And like in order to be a good chess player, you must partially like become a robot. Like you must teach yourself to think like the robots do.
There's something very robotic about that. I do not take gambits. Like,
in order to become the best chess, like Magnus Carlsen, it's said that playing against him is like playing against a machine. Or what's interesting is that used to be true, right? When you played against him in 2015, 2016, he was of the Russian style. He was methodical. Like, it was like fighting against a wall, and then the moment you slipped up, he crept in and destroyed you. You know? It was like you got steamrolled. But then, with AlphaZero, Magnus started studying AlphaZero's patterns. And now Magnus plays very loose, very aggressive, very free, because he understands that the value of a piece is based on its activity. It's not based on whether or not it's on the board. And that if you can make a piece unable to move, if you can paralyze your opponent's pieces, if you can destroy their defenses, that's better than methodically crushing them. And so he's playing style, he's no longer, he doesn't play like a robot anymore. He does do gambits. He does risk because he's learned from AlphaZero. And now, like, that's even scarier. That's even scarier. The idea of playing against Magnus Carlsen is so...
Oh, my God.
The dude is this, like, Norwegian bodybuilder, right? Like, he's very good at soccer, too, bizarrely. there was a stream one time where he was in a tournament, and he stepped away from his computer for a moment, and a bunch of, like, hot Norwegian babes wandered over to, like, look at what was on the screen, and they were like, oh, Magnus, are you in a tournament right now? And he was like, yeah, let me get back to it. He's like, get out.
Oh my God.
The Norwegian babes like leave the monitor, and he gets back to camp. And all that. So, like, dude.
Oh.
So Pot of Wonder.
Oh. Right.
Yes. Ooh, give me one moment because I do need to feed Morpheus.
Of course.
Staring at me.
It might be a good idea to genuinely wrap up soon because I do have to grab food.
That is fair.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a good job. Okay.
It's fun. I don't know. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
I know. It's really fun. I'm having a good time.
Hey, yeah. You know, if you ever want me to, I don't know, if you ever want to, I don't know, hang out in a podcast environment again, I would be down.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. I feel like we have to have you back to talk about Wander Home at some point.
So. We have to actually do the point of this.
Yeah.
So, perhaps.
Yeah. In a way, this feels appropriate. Like, I was planning to start this by doing that classic interview thing of quoting something that you've written down at you. And I feel like it kind of negates the necessity for an interview. Mm-hmm. But so the introduction of Wander Home is, it says, "It is not my place to describe the entire history of the land of Heath. These tales live on to this day, but they are not mine to tell." So really, like, any thoughts that you have about Wander Home that kind of feels like they're not canon, like whatever you come up with at the table is kind of what the world is about.
Yeah. And I even refer to things that I hold about the Heath that aren't in the book. I refer to those as headcanons. Those are headcanons to me. Like when I'm like someone asked me recently, like, what's the deal with whales? And I was like, oh, well, my headcanon for whales is that those are the largest of the daemons. Or, you know, even the emissaries of the gods are whale people. And that doesn't have to be true for everyone. That's just true for, you know?
Your answer can be different.
Yeah. And, like, if it's not in the book, then clearly I didn't feel strongly enough about it, like, to put it in the book, you know? Like, what's the deal with daemons? I don't know. I didn't write that down. I kind of have feelings for me, but they're a me problem, you know? And I like it when creators do that. I like it when they're more wishy-washy than definite. I can have headcanons, too. We can all have headcanons.
Yeah. Like, just because you made the thing doesn't mean, like, what you put is any more valid than anything else.
Mm-hmm. I don't know Wander Home better than, like, at this point, it's like, there are people who have played Wander Home more than I have, right? There are people who have probably read the book. I think I am probably still the person who has spent the most time thinking about every single word in Wander Home. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, like, you know, that doesn't mean, that just means that, like, any authority I have comes from the fact that I've read the book more than you. And, like, that gives me a certain position when it comes to analyzing the book because I know it better. But that doesn't mean that I, like, objectively know it better or that being an author gives me some privilege. It just means that I've had an extra year with the manuscript, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It will easily be a point where people have more thoughts about Wander Home than I can have because it's just, my thoughts are not privileged in that context. It is just that, you know, everyone can analyze Wander Home and I'm analyzing the same text you are. And I can tell you my analysis of it. But that doesn't mean that my analysis is more or less correct. And that's world building.
that's world building.
Yes. Yeah. I love the stuff that's left up more to the audience to figure out. Cause it's just like, it also feels very real in a lot of ways. Like there's a lot of things in the world that we know of, but don't think about or truly understand in depth. So it feels fitting that there's aspects of the world in Wander Home that, you know, aren't necessarily set in stone and that everyone doesn't have perfect understanding of.
Yeah. Well, it just felt super wrong to me to have a section in Wander Home where I tell you the deal with the King of the Floating Mountain. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That feels kind of fucked. That feels incorrect. Wander Home should not spend that much time talking about the King of the Floating Mountain. I will subtextually tell you a lot about the King of the Floating Mountain. I think really, if you spend time with the book, you look at the options, the King of the Floating Mountain and the Rebellion.
I loved the pink orchids, strewn throughout the playbooks. I loved that.
I love that so much. It's such a beautiful reoccurring symbol for me of the themes of the game being the rebellion is this meaningful force. Like, I don't know. My mom loves Italy very dearly and I've learned a lot about Italy from her. And one thing that, you know, she used to sing me Bella Ciao when I was a little kid, as a baby, that was my going to bed song. It was Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Ciao, Ciao. You know? It's a song about going off to war to fight the fascists. It's an anti-fascist song. It's a song about going off to war to fight the fascists and dying and you are buried, and a beautiful flower is planted over your body so that everyone knows when they pass where you died that this is the site of, you know, a beautiful hero. And that was very Wanderhome in a weird way for me. Like, I wanted that kind of partisan Antifa, you know, mid 20th century fighting the Nazis vibe from the Rebellion. And I love one of the stretch goal playbooks by Riley Rethel is very beautiful character. That's the Rebel. And they've got, you know, the art for them. I literally sent Letty a picture of an Italian partisan. And I was like, draw this, but as a chipmunk. Very like, it's this chubby little chipmunk wearing like a red bandana, smoking a cigarette, and like carrying pamphlets. I'm like, that's what I wanted.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on and talking about Wanderhome, Jay.
It was very disjointed, but very fun. It was really nice to hang out with both of you, despite my shame. I miss both of you. I miss y'all. We should
miss you too.
At some point, we shall all be reunited.
Yes,
so true. I'll make my way down the East Coast, and once cons are real again, I'll be selling books at them. You know, I'll be doing my job. It's also funny. I think that we became friends like right before Wanderhome, you know what I mean? Like, it's like now I know when I go to a con, I'm gonna have to deal with a bunch of weirdos, but it's nice to know that I've got actual friends there too, so not to be sad.
Yeah.
Thank you. Where should people go if they want to support your podcast?
I mean, Danny? This is kind of it.
That's fine.
We technically do have a Patreon, but we've never advertised it because it feels awkward.
Yeah,
I feel you. My advertisement today felt that awkward. Yeah.
And now that I know that the algorithm's going to shut me down anyway,
I know our Twitter handle is Pot of Wonder. We've also got potofwonder.com which just links to the episode feed, but
everything's broken down into seasons, but the seasons aren't like related in any way, so start with the most recent ones. Those are the good ones.
Yeah, because every season we've gotten significantly better.
Yeah. And season one we recorded next to a subway track.
Oh god.
Well, only going up from here. Well, thank you all so much. I do have to head out and get some lunch.
Yeah.
But this was really wonderful and I really appreciate it. And even though this is perhaps not the most coherent podcast, it was a lot of fun to goof around with y'all.
That's kind of our brand. Not the most coherent, but it is fun.
Honestly, that's fun to me. That's great to me. I think coherence is for the birds.
Yeah. I like that you asked about like us plugging us. Like you're the guest. Where can people support Possum Creek Games?
You can support Possum Creek Games on Patreon. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/possumcreek. We do wonderful stuff there. We have a Discord where we hang out a lot. We do fun jokes and games, and I do a lot of streaming on there when I'm working. Like when I'm writing stuff, I'll hop on call and people can hang out with me while I write. That's where I do most of my socializing these days, is on there. And it's a great Discord. It's a great Patreon. I'm really proud of the stuff we put up there. You can check me out on Twitter. I'm the only Jay Dragon on there. I promise you're not going to find another one. there's a couple, but like, come on. Jay Dragon 07. I'm not, you know, you're not real name. You can check out our website, possumcreekgames.com, for all of our wonderful games that we have obliquely or not so obliquely referenced at various points throughout this. gosh, where else can you find us? Instagram, YouTube, technically. Patreon, again, please. Kickstarter, Join our mailing list, we're gearing up. I don't know when this podcast will be coming out, but we're gearing up for a really exciting new release of... we're doing a little breather before our next big project, where we are helping My dear friend and incredible collaborator and amazing game writer, Jamila Najati. He is putting out Our Haunt, which is a very beautiful GM-less game about being a group of ghosts in a haunted house and being a found family of ghosts. And we are going to be releasing, we're going to be doing the book on Kickstarter. It's going to be a super fast, super exciting, like, you know, bing, bang, boom kind of Kickstarter. It's going to be a lot of, it's going to be really cool. It's going to be a lot of fun. That's coming soon. And then, you know, keep an eye out, of course, for March 2022 when we plan on doing our most exciting, biggest, riskiest, most exciting venture yet that I'm so nervous about. Yuzeba's Bed and Breakfast, which will be coming soon.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay! We did it!
Our podcast just kind of ends too, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yay! It's good.
It's good. It's good. Well, thank you all. I do desperately need lunch now. I'm
okay.
Yeah. Take care, both of you. Please feel free to write me on whenever. This was one of the most delightful podcasting experiences I've had.
This has been Pod of Wonder. You can find us on Twitter at Pod of Wonder. You can email us at podofwonder@gmail.com. And you can buy some t-shirts at society6.com/podofwonder. Our opening theme is Opening by Komiku. And our closing theme is Glue Glue, also by Komiku.